Hi everyone, this is Michelle with the Warrior Painters podcast. In this episode, you'll hear from BizDev artist and art instructor Sherwin Abisamis. After spending a decade in an office job, Sherwin had a surprising and emotional experience that reignited his passion for art and set him on the path to becoming an artist. Along with plein air painting, he enjoys documenting his surroundings with audio and photography. I particularly enjoyed listening to Sherwin's plans for his future and where he sees the animation industry going.
Hello, my name is Sherwin Abisamis, and I'm a visual development artist. I'm working at DreamWorks Animation Television. The project that I'm currently on is the new Jurassic World TV series, and it's called Camp Cretaceous. And in the past, I've worked for companies like Nickelodeon, Hasbro, Warner Brothers, and Titmouse. In the evenings, I'm also teaching a introductory digital painting class over at Concept Design Academy, mostly cool. Techniques and that kind of stuff.
Do you know when your interest in art first started?
Yeah, I think at a very, very early age. I'm not sure if I realized that I wanted to be an artist, but I really, really liked drawing. I think my earliest memories of drawing was like Star Wars and dinosaurs. And as far as the dinosaurs are concerned, I pretty much drew them all. I remember being really proud of like some early drawings. Like when I was drawing T-Rexes, like I would take the time to draw like the little in-between muscle between like the upper and lower jaws of T-Rexes. I think they're called buccal flaps. For some reason that like me taking the time to draw those things out really stuck out as a memory. I guess it bleeds into like my personality now. Like I really take pride in putting in those intricacies into my work.
Yeah, you're working on a show with dinosaurs.
Yeah, it kind of just worked out. As far as like me figuring out like whether art would be good for a career or not, there were a couple of experiences in my youth that kind of had a major influence on me. The first one was, I think it was in the third grade. There was a sketch of a rooster that we had to do. And everyone was given the same picture. And at the time, I developed a really weird and bizarre way of drawing. At least I think it's kind of strange.
How so?
So whenever I would have to measure something, like say, for example, like a line would be 3 inches long, I would kind of sound out little hash marks in my head. Like it'd be like chick, 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 kind of like that. I would kind of use that as like an auditory way to check my drawing. And so I would, that's for some reason, I'm not sure where I picked that up, but for some reason, that's how I learned to draw. And I remember when I finished the sketch of the rooster, kind of using that same method, I was the only person who kind of got a resemblance of the rooster. I actually still have it at home. But the teacher was so impressed by that, that she decided to submit it to the Los Angeles County Fair. And it won an award there, like a blue ribbon award.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I thought, oh, maybe, you know, this means I have some talent and maybe, you know, and people started to think of me as like, oh, you're the artist.
Like, yeah, class artist.
I never really like, you know, thought that you could draw for a living until I started hanging out with one of my best friends. And him and his family lived up in Chino Hills, which is kind of a well-to-do neighborhood. But I remember going to his place and just, you know, just being amazed at how well off he was. And I asked him like, hey, what does your dad do? And he's like, oh, he's an artist. He draws for a living. I was like, oh, cool. Can I like see his work? And he showed me his drafting table. And on his table were like these really like tiny, I don't know, maybe they were like no more than 3 or 4 inches, like illustrations of things like turkeys and like household appliances. And so apparently like he would do illustrations for newspapers and like classifieds and stuff and get that printed. But it apparently made so much money that he was like, you know, pretty well off.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. And I was shocked and I was like, oh, maybe, you know, this is a viable career path after all. In high school, I was the class cartoonist for the newspaper. But to be honest, that experience was kind of traumatic because as the cartoonist, you're expected to be like funny and also have talent in drawing. And while I would say that I could kind of draw well, I wasn't particularly funny.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And, you know, like, you know how high school kids are. They can be mean. Like, they would make comments about, like, how unfunny my drawings were.
Aww.
So, I mean, yeah, it kind of, like, you know, those little, like, barbs from kids would kind of, like, push me away, you know, from doing art. So I kind of had, like, a weird love-hate relationship with art by that time.
Oh, that's unfortunate to have that environment then where it wasn't that encouraging.
Oh, yeah.
Your art and stuff. So what did you end up doing?
What I ended up doing was I went to university. I went to UCLA to pursue a degree in biology. But that's mostly because, like, I originally applied to UCLA as an art major. And I got in. And just based on my grades and my entrance essay. And they said, oh, this is awesome. Can we see your portfolio? And I looked at their letter and I thought to myself, well, what the heck is a portfolio? Like, no one ever, like, explained to me in high school that I should have been working on one of these. And so I was kind of embarrassed about that. And I also, at the time, I somehow convinced myself that, like, if I had turned my hobby or my passion for art into a job, that for some reason or another, that I would end up hating it eventually. And, like, for some reason, like, I wanted to protect that. So I actually moved away from art for a number of years. After I graduated from university, like, I kind of didn't know what to do. I finished with biology. And while I do like science and I do have an interest in it, I didn't really have a passion for it. And I couldn't really see myself doing field research or, like, laboratory work. So I was kind of at a loss of what to do. So what I did was, after college, my mom suggested that I go, you know, pick up a job working for the government. So I worked for the city of Los Angeles as more or less like an office worker. First position was a clerk typist. The second was a management assistant. So I worked in an office worked for this Los Angeles Convention Center. And I worked for the Department of Water and Power for about 10 or so years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a long time. But mostly, like, it was kind of like I spent most of that time just kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And I guess after some time, the itch to make art kind of started creeping back into my life after putting it away for so long. I think the biggest thing that happened was I took a trip to Europe. And, like, when you travel, you know, you're exposed to different ideas and different ways of living, and it kind of opens your mind up to new concepts. And also, if you go to Europe, I mean, you know this, like, there's art everywhere. And you can't help but be inspired by what you see there. And I remember, during that trip, I just wanted to draw more and more. And this is a kind of funny story. I remember with my tour group, we went to Florence and we visited the Uffizi Gallery. And my docent took us to see the Birth of Venus by Botticelli. And I remember standing in front of that painting and just kind of staring at it for a long time, like, very intently. I'm not sure why. And then all of a sudden, like, tears started to fall from my eyes. And I was like, wait, what's going on? Like, what's happening? Like, I guess I was particularly moved by that painting. And, like, I couldn't figure out what was going on. And I was kind of, like, embarrassed because, like, suddenly crying in front of this painting in front of, like, my tour mates. So I kind of excused myself. And I was, like, trying to, like, introspect and trying to figure out, like, what's going on. The conclusion I came to was that maybe I just missed art that much, and I felt like I really needed to make it a part of my life. But it wasn't until years later that I found out that that's actually a strange psychological phenomenon. I think they call it Stendhal syndrome, or, like, when people are exposed to great beauty, like, they sometimes have fainting spells or, like, physical reactions to it. And I think that's what happened to me. But the way I took it was, oh, I should start drawing again. So, like, immediately after that, we had some free time and I said, okay, I should start drawing again. I know this is going to be bad, but I just feel like the urge to. So I went to the local bookstore in Florence. I bought a pen, I bought a paper, and I just started sketching the statues and the people in the plaza. And it felt It felt awesome. For the rest of the trip, I just kept drawing and drawing. And the more I did it, the more I fell in love with it. And I told myself, like, I like this feeling. Like, I don't want to let it go. And so when I get back to America, like, I'm going to start, like, enrolling in classes and, you know, just trying to make art, like, a part of my life. I never really had any goals of being an artist, like a full-time artist. I just wanted to draw again. So, because I just felt it was really necessary. And I've always wanted to have art friends, you know, who kind of just share the same passion for art that I did. And, you know, the more I drew, the more I was able to meet people who had that kind of passion. And then the more people sensed that enthusiasm for me, the more they encouraged me. And that slowly started to lead me down this path where, you know, maybe I should consider making art a career. You know, my fear of losing passion for art, be damned. Like, I just have to try it. I just have to do it. And, you know, I eventually just went all in on it. Long story short, like, I saved up tons of money from my day job. And then I quit and, you know, tried to apply to a bunch of studios in animation. It wasn't easy. Like, I actually almost ran out of money. But luckily, like, right at the point where I was just about to go broke, a couple of people reached out to me and I got my first gigs in animation. And, you know, one job led to another and the rest is history.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when did you start getting into landscape painting?
I think I mostly got serious about landscape painting when Jackson Z was teaching the gouache landscape painting class. Like, I was introduced to it through a couple of workshops by Mike Hernandez at CDA, and I enjoyed it, but it wasn't until taking Jackson's class that I kind of fell in love with landscape and plein air painting. For his class, I think I did like the most homework I've ever done for a particular art class. Yeah. I mean, he asked us to do like as many paintings as we wanted, but I did 5 paintings every week. So by the end of the course, I was up to like 50 paintings. And I learned like so much from that experience. It was awesome. And then afterwards, like, I wanted to keep painting because I just really liked being out in nature and, you know, communing with it and just really enjoying, like, you know, the fresh air and the challenges of plein air painting. I think what really appeals to me about plein air painting is, like, I have a penchant for recording, like, not just with like traditional media, but also with photographs. And I like to carry around an analog recorder as well, or not analog, but like a digital audio recorder, and record sounds. I think I'm just really into recording things. Mm-hmm. And so plein air just kind of scratches that itch for me.
So around this time, was this when you knew you wanted to get into animation? And if so, like, what did you want to do? Background painting?
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. Like, when I first tried out for animation jobs, I think my portfolio was just like everybody else's. What I mean by that is, like, I would have the kitchen sink and more. Like, I would try to do everything, like character yeah. designs and props and backgrounds and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And, like, I never really got any bites in terms of, like, landing jobs. And my first job in animation was given to me by one of the teachers at CDA. His name is Jay Oliva, and he was a storyboard teacher there. And I was the class monitor for his class for quite a bit. And one time I decided, you know, instead of just kind of listening in on his class, as I'm, like, kind of making sure that everything's running well, maybe I'll do the homework this time. So I did the homework, and he was kind of impressed, and he was like, "Hey, you want a job?" And I was like, "Yes, please." So my first job was just doing storyboard cleanup on one of their DC titles. So basically, for those who aren't familiar, storyboard cleanup is kind of a role that doesn't really exist in animation right now. Most people know of, like, storyboard revisionists, which is actually the next step above storyboard cleanup. A storyboard cleanup artist, they're only allowed to revise drawings. Basically, my job was to turn someone else's squiggles into Batman. While a revisionist can, like, change the camera angle, have a little bit more leeway to do that kind of stuff. So my first project was working on a direct-to-DVD short I think it was Assault on Arkham. And I spent about 6 weeks or so, like, you know, doing storyboards and cleanup for them. And what I got out of the experience was, like, I don't want to do storyboards. I have immense respect for everyone who does storyboards because I think it's the hardest job to do in animation.
I agree. Yeah.
You have to know how to be able to do everything on time and, you know, with the quality that is expected out of you. But I think I mostly realized that I just really like painting. And so what I ended up doing afterwards was, after that experience of doing storyboard cleanup, I went back to my portfolio and I threw out everything that wasn't related to background painting. And I just decided to just make a background painting only portfolio. And I think having that clarity of what you want started to, you know, pay off in the end, because I started to get more offers for work.
Yeah. And sometimes it takes just doing something you realize you don't like for
exactly.
you to realize what you do like.
Yeah. I mean, I worked at a job for 11 years.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. So in your professional work, which is doing BG painting and stuff, have you found that like your plein air painting or traditional painting skills have helped?
Yeah, actually they have, like, quite a bit. So I think, like, that's probably one of the reasons why I got one of the jobs I did. So I was a background painter for Transformers, Robots in Disguise, over at Hasbro. And at the time, one of their background painters had left the company. So my name was tossed around by one of the production folks there, Preston Doe.
Yeah, Preston.
And he passed my name on to the art director at the time, Christophe Vacher. And Christophe liked my work well enough to ask me to come in for an interview. And after a few weeks, he offered me the job. And I worked on that project for about 2 years. And after the project had ended, like, we kept in touch. And I asked him, hey, what was it about my portfolio that made you want to hire me? And he said, like, oh, when I looked at your work, I saw that you had, you know, a pretty good understanding of color and light. And it looks like you had spent a lot of time working on your foundations, and it looks like you understand how light actually works, because it looks like you've been outside and painted. And so he says, like, I saw that and I saw potential in you. And that's why I decided to hire you, because I felt like, oh, I could develop this person to become an even better artist. Yeah, I would say plein air painting has helped a lot in my professional career, at least in that sense. And then sometimes, like, as far as, like, my current, like, work goes, sometimes I'll grab some of my plein air paintings and, like, scan them and bring them in to Photoshop to kind of use as, like, a base for picking color palettes from.
Mm.
I know it's gotten me out of a jam, like, you know, for, like, a specific type of, like, environment, maybe, you know, jungles or beaches or something.
Was that for studio work or for personal work?
I would do it for studio work.
Oh.
I wouldn't like use my painting per se. I would just like color pick from the palettes, because I felt like, you know, you can only get so much color out of a photograph, but sometimes, like, the colors you can get from plein air painting can be truer to life and to the experiences that you had when you were painting it. Yeah, and I would say, like, as far as helping me level up my color skills, plein air painting, I think, has taught me some pretty important lessons. And then one of the more interesting ones that I picked up on was, you know, like, the normal way to paint is to look at the environment and see a color, and you try to match it on your palette, and then you put it down. But one of the things I learned from a workshop that I took with Eric Merrill, and I'm not sure if he necessarily said this, but when I was watching him paint, I noticed that he would paint something, put it on his canvas, and then I would see the color out there. So it was almost like it was the other way around. And so I tried that. Like, I tried to look at my painting and imagine, maybe using color theory or maybe just trying to feel it out, that the color would be there, and then I would look up and I would see the color there. It's kind of like how you are looking for your luggage, like a baggage claim.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you know, you're so hyper-focused on seeing that particular piece of luggage. Maybe you attach, like, a red strap to it. So you're like, I got to find this red strap or something. I kind of see plein air painting in that way. Like, I know I should be seeing that color. And sometimes you don't see that color until you start looking for that color, instead of the other way around, where you kind of let colors come in passively. Sometimes it's fun to actively look for colors and have them pop up in your vision.
Yeah, I've never thought of it that way. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, I'll have to give it a try. So do you still do a lot of photography?
I do. Yeah. I mean, not much these days, obviously.
Yeah, can't go, really out. Go out.
I think my main passions in photography are portraits and landscapes. For me, I kind of viewed like photography as, it's kind of become almost as important for me as drawing, mostly in the fact that as I started to get more and more into painting, I found myself becoming a better photographer. And the more I got back into photography, the more I became a better painter. And I was thinking about this, and you know, I was trying to understand why. And I came to the realization that, like, for me, photography and painting are kind of the same thing, in the sense that you're trying to make a picture with both media, but you're just kind of approaching it from different ends. So with painting, you start off with a blank canvas. You start off with nothing. And you're adding like paints onto it to make something. Well, photography is actually the complete opposite. You know, you're literally starting off with the entire universe. And your job as a photographer is to crop this small image to create meaning. So in the end, whether you start from nothing or you start from everything, eventually, you know, through either media, you have to make choices about the image that you want to make, and you'll end up creating something.
Mm-hmm. You seem really into documenting, whether it's visuals through painting, camera, and also audio and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought of doing like films or recording video?
Actually, yeah. I'm seriously thinking about that. I've been investing in some like camera gear. I have plans to travel overseas pretty soon. And I haven't really shared this, but I was kind of toying with the idea of starting like a little YouTube channel to kind of share my experiences overseas. And so I think it just kind of lines up with all of my interests in recording my day-to-day life and, you know, sharing it with people.
Yeah. Well, now that you've put it out there, I'm going to have to hold you to it. Yeah, speaking of traveling abroad, I remember you really wanted to move to Japan, right? And live and work there. Is that still the case?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after my current stint at DreamWorks ends, and if I get accepted into the language school of my choice, like I'm planning on leaving the United States for about a year or so to take a break from the industry and just study Japanese so that I'm better able to work on projects there. Like about 3 years ago, I lived in Tokyo for a short while, you know, to do some research on what I should do in case I want to work in the anime industry. And at the time, I visited many like animation and background painting studios and made lots of friends there. And when I asked them, like, hey, what do I need to do to work over here? They all gave me the same piece of advice, which is, we think your skills are fine. Just, you got to learn Japanese. So, and in order to get work done there, you have to communicate with each other. Yeah. So after I came back from that trip, I decided to, you know, spend some time like learning Japanese here, but I think like I probably will need to spend more time over there just to get my speaking ability up to par. Like as to the reason of maybe why I want to work in Japan, I think partly is because I wanted to scratch an itch that I've had since childhood. Like I grew up watching anime. I think my first love of cartoons were all Japanese cartoons like Macross, but at the time we knew it as Robotech. I remember in my teenage years, I would get super obsessed with watching like anime, like Akira and like Fist of the North Star and, you know, kinds of like 80s types anime. It's had a colossal influence on me. And for me, it'd be a kind of a dream to work on a title over there someday. But I think like I started to realize that I'm kind of been lucky enough to be put into a position where I can interface and network with like, artists on both sides. And so sometimes I wonder that deep down inside, like the real reason like I'm trying to get over there is maybe I can be a conduit, you know, through which ideas and opportunities can flow you know, back and forth from east to west and end up benefiting like both industries, you know, as a result. Me personally, I think that the future of animation is global, and I want to somehow in my small way, like help to create, you know, that new world of animation.
You already did. What was the name of the artist that I think you brought him over, or you connected him to CDA?
Yeah, his name was Yoichi Nishikawa.
Right. Yeah.
He was he's an artist who worked at Studio Ghibli and Studio Chizu as both a background painter and art director. We met at a small background painting studio that he was working at over there. And I think we immediately connected because we kind of see ourselves in each other. Like he wants to come over to America and work on American projects. And I want to go over there and work on Japanese projects. And I was kind of actually inspired by him because he came over to America to spend some time learning English. And so I thought, oh, maybe I should do the same.
Yeah. Like you're living parallel lives.
Yeah.
Just opposite.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I know you've been with the Warrior Painters for quite a while. Do you remember how you joined?
I don't remember exactly. Because I know that Angela has been inviting me to like painting sessions before it was known as the Warrior Painters. So my memories at the time was a little fuzzy. I think it was probably as early as 2013. And I was thinking about this the other day. And so I went back into my Facebook events and tried to look up when like maybe the first session was. And I think it was at Eden Canyon, at least as far as the official Warrior Painters is concerned. But I know Angela had set up like previous like sessions before.
Okay. So yeah, your connection was through Angela.
Mm-hmm.
So what has been your experience with the group and what do you like about it?
It's been awesome. Yeah. I admit I haven't been able to go out as much. Not just because of the coronavirus, but I've just sometimes been straddled with too much work. But I really like the positive atmosphere that the group has. And like for me, like I like being by myself a lot because I feel that art in and of itself, it's a solitary lifestyle, and you know, to get good at it, it requires that you spend a lot of time alone, but that doesn't necessarily mean you have to go through your whole journey by yourself. You know, when I feel the need to socialize, like I like to go out and be in a group. And I feel like the Warrior Painters does a really good job of like welcoming new people into the group and encouraging people. And, you know, oftentimes like when I look at other people's paintings and I see things that, oh, maybe I could do this for next time. You know, it pushes me to do better, you know. Even just the fact that someone else is organizing these things, like I really appreciate it because, you know, sometimes you just need some motivation to get off your couch once in a while.
Yeah. So to wrap things up, what are some tips that you would give to people who want to start plein air painting?
Sure. I think some of the tips I usually give to my students, you know, by all means, just go out and paint. And paint as much as you can. But I think like sometimes the idea of going out plein air painting is a bit daunting. So I suggest that like if you're not comfortable with it, take it step by step. And what I mean by that is like I would start off with still lifes. Set up a little area in your house or your room and set up a still life with just like one light and just a couple of things that you want to paint. What's great about still lifes is they're still. They don't move. And not only the still life doesn't move, but the light doesn't move. So you can take all the time in the world that you want, you know, to make a really nice painting. And I think it's okay. I tell my students all the time, don't worry about painting at like hyper speed. Don't do speed paintings. It's okay to take your time to slow down and get things right. Because the speed will come as you make paintings properly. Because you'll get faster because you're just making less mistakes. And then maybe the next thing you can do, you know, when quarantine is over, or you can enroll some of your housemates or your family, is maybe do portraits of people. So you've added one level of complexity, which is maybe the light will stay consistent, but now you have a moving person because they're breathing, their clothes are shifting. But that adds like one level of complexity that you can add to the mix. Or, you know, people aren't going to sit for like 3 hours, like more than 3 hours at a time. So you have a time limit now. And when you're ready to take the next step after still lifes and portraits, you know, then try going outside where everything is moving. The light's moving. The environment's moving. You know, objects are moving. Like maybe you're painting like a car and the guy who owns the car decides to drive away. But I would say like, you know, for those who want to do it, like it's okay to take baby steps. And it's okay to just paint what's around you. I mean, it's nice to go out to different locations and, you know, paint incredible landscapes, but there's so much beauty that can be found within the confines of our own home. You know, sometimes I find myself like during the day, just staring at the way the light kind of comes through windows in my apartment. And yeah, I don't think you have to travel very far to make nice paintings. And I think like we have it all within our grasp to get better at art and to practice with the stuff that we have.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That was excellent advice. And you've shared so much wonderful, wonderful knowledge.
Yeah, you're welcome, Michelle. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. We love hearing from you. So please leave a comment and share your thoughts. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to see more from the Warrior Painters, please consider donating to our Gumroad. You'll find the link in our description. Thanks and see you again soon.